This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Keeping an eye on what is going on in the Middle East. If you're just waking up or if you have not been following what's gone on for the last couple of hours, Israel has carried out a number of strikes in Iran, and there are reports that there have been strikes carried out in Iraq as well. So most of these appear to be drones. We don't have any word on casualties as of yet. This is in retaliation for the attack that we talked about yesterday, which occurred on Saturday, where no one was killed and which half of the missiles were apparently duds and the other half were repelled by both the Israeli Iron Dome and a coalition of countries, including the United States, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia. So I am very fearful of where this could lead, the next step of this. Now, we're going to talk with Debbie Schlussel a little later. I am sure she is going to disagree with me, and that's fine. But I am fearful that in the short term, this is going to lead to a massive uptick in oil prices, which I don't think is good for the global economy. It's certainly not good for inflation in the United States. But putting aside the economic factor of this, Iran, whether or not they are already a nuclear capable power, Iran is not like Iraq. Iran has a very sophisticated military. They have a tremendous amount of oil wealth. They also have these proxies that these militias all over the region, which could prove quite troublesome. And my fear is this could lead to a tremendous global conflict where you have Israel, the United States, the UK against Iran, Lebanon, and the Houthis. And this could be very dangerous. I think this has the potential to be much worse than the war in Iraq because of the population that Iran had as compared to Iraq, because of the area and territory that Iran has as compared to Iraq. As of now, we don't know much about this, but what we are getting a sense of is that Iran is likely to retaliate against Israel because of this. So we don't know how many Iranians have been killed at this point, but if Iran retaliates, there's no guarantee that it's going to be like the kind of attack that took place on Saturday, where some people said that they tipped their hand, they signaled what they were going to do. My friend Curtis Lewa has been calling it Wag the Dog Part 2. Or maybe the Israeli Defense Force is so sophisticated that they were just able to stop any of the Iranian drones and missiles from getting through. If they retaliate again, which so far they've given every indication they plan to do, there's no guarantee that that next attack is going to go as well. And then what happens? Then Israel will retaliate again and Iran will retaliate again. And there's going to be pressure on the United States to get involved. I think this is very bad news. And I'm obviously hoping for the best and praying for the best. They're saying, thankfully, that the targets that Israel struck in Iran were not nuclear. That's the word from the International Atomic Energy Agency. They're saying there's no damage to Iran's nuclear sites. Thank goodness, because that could be not only very dangerous for the people living in Iran, but it could lead to a much greater act of reprisal and retaliation from the Iranians. Here is Hussein Amir Abdullain on CNN in an interview that was released 2 hours before the attack on Israel, essentially with them saying that Israel would regret any attack.
In case of a repeated adventure-seeking and adventurism of the Israeli regime, what will our maximum response be? I can only say that it will be carried out at a maximum level and it will be regretful for them. The details have been planned by the armed forces of my country.
He continued...
In case of a repeated adventure-seeking and adventurism of the Israeli regime, what will our maximum response be? I can only say that it will be carried out at a maximum level and it will be regretful for them. The details have been planned by the armed forces of my country.
All right, well, that was actually the same portion of that interview. So that's where we are. We are seeing bombs fall in the Middle East, and we are seeing this Middle Eastern war escalate. And as far as I'm concerned, that's bad news. If you want to comment on any aspect of this, now's your opportunity. Be my guest. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. I think that obviously things could be worse, but things could certainly be better. We'll see what happens. All right. And then you can also email me at frank.morano@redappleaudionetworks.com. That's frank.morano@redappleaudionetworks.com. Bring you any news on this as it breaks over the next couple of hours, but it's certainly a very anxious time for everybody that's paying attention to anything that's going on in the Middle East right now. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment. And then a little later, we'll chat with Debbie Schlossel. We'll get her take. Debbie is very hawkish, obviously, and very vocal in her defense and support of Israel. So I have a feeling she's going to be all for dropping as many bombs as possible. I don't mean to laugh on Iran, but we'll see where it goes. Joaquin is in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Hello, Joaquin.
Hey, Frank. Have you ever heard of Armageddon?
Yes, I have indeed. Sure.
Okay. This all sounds like end times biblical prophecy.
Well, I mean, it does, you know, and that's what's what I find so frightening when you have the cradle of civilization and these ancient civilizations all attacking one another with one or more of them having nuclear weapons. It's very frightening.
Yes, but you see, here's the whole thing, and this is something that's bothered me because in a lot of ways, the United States has actually started abandoning Israel, you know, turning their backs on them.
Well, it's going to be interesting, and I want to hear the rest of your comment, but it's going to be interesting what Biden does now, because Biden has been publicly and privately telling Netanyahu, don't do this, don't carry out these attacks on Iran. But all the while, he's still been funding them, not just the $4 billion we give them every year, but he's given them whatever they ask for, both in terms of cash and military aid. So now that Netanyahu has openly defied him and we're the biggest sponsor of Israel in the world, it'll be interesting to see if Biden finally cuts off the money or if Netanyahu calls his bluff and we're going to still give them all the money they want, even though they're openly defying what our government has asked them not to do.
Well, you see, here's what bothers me, okay? And this goes back to the Obama administration. You know, they funded the Iranians. They gave them all kinds of money, okay? They took off the sanctions. They're allowing them to develop their nuclear programs, you know? And so, you know, when you look at the Bible, you know, they say everybody abandons Israel at the end, you know? And I'm going to tell you right now, what, in my opinion, Israel should take out Iran's nuclear program because, unfortunately, under Obama and Biden, they've been funding that. They gave them the money. And when it comes down to the oil, you know, and I know you voted for Trump, but you're not a big Trump fan. But
no,
you know,
I am a big Trump fan. He's not my favorite presidential candidate this cycle.
Now, I know that. But you know, the thing of it is he was the first one to ever give us complete energy independence and dominance.
You know, right now we are pumping more oil than at any point in American history, right?
No, I don't completely believe that.
Well, so you think the oil company, you think the oil companies are making this up?
Frank, all I know is this. Under Trump, I paid $2.40 a gallon for gas.
Right, okay? And you're aware that there was a when Trump was president, when you were paying that price, there was a massive shutdown of the global economy during COVID, and no one was driving to work. You're aware of that, right?
No, but this, you see, this was even before the global, before the COVID
shutdown.
What
year? What year do you think you were paying that price?
Oh, 2017, 2018.
So 2017, what month? What month do you think you were paying that price?
Frank, I couldn't tell you what month.
Give me ballpark, ballpark.
All I can say is that when Obama left office, it was about $4 a gallon. And when Trump came in, it started going down. And I don't remember the exact dates, you know, but. And yes, when Trump, I know what you're saying about COVID, the demand was down, but.
So in January, just a couple of weeks before Obama's inauguration, it was, we also had the global financial crisis, right? So that's when oil, gas prices were at their lowest. But the fact that the economy is in the tubes and that leads to gas prices being down, I don't think that's an indication of whether we should be okay with attacking Iran or not. And what you're going to see now that Iran's being attacked, and now that they're putting sanctions back on Venezuela, you're going to see a tremendous uptick in oil prices right now.
I agree with that. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, but go ahead. I'll give you the last word.
I can't help it. I can't. A nuclear. What I've seen, what my opinion is over the years, and this even goes back to Bush and it goes to the globalist agenda, they've done everything that they can to prop up Iran. Okay. And Iran says death to America, you know, and I don't understand what the mindset is to put, you know, when they took out Iraq, they took there was a natural enemy situation between Iraq and Iran.
Right.
They were constantly at war. And why did we go into Iraq?
No, it's absurd. It's an absolutely absurd thing. I agree with you completely on that, Joaquin. And we changed by taking out Saddam Hussein the entire balance of power in the region. And it does affect Iran. It affects Iraq. It also affects Saudi Arabia and Israel. I mean, everything that's happened over the course of the last 21 years makes you realize how foolish of a mistake it was to go into Iraq and take out Saddam Hussein. It was very foolish. But the thing you got to understand is Americans may not have much of a long memory when it comes to foreign relations and Iranian history, but the Iranians do. So think about it from the Iranian perspective. Okay. In 1956, and this is not conspiracy stuff, our government has admitted this. In 1956, under the CIA and Kermit Roosevelt overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran. Do you think that's going to make them like us more or less? We precipitate a coup to install a friendly regime and we bring in the Shah. The Shah was to dissidents and to many different groups a very brutal dictator. Now, he was not a brutal theocratic dictator as the mullahs that are in control now are, but the Shah, with U.S. support, crushed all possible opposition to the point where no one else had a chance of taking over the government except for these Muslim extremists. So that's one thing. We install a puppet government that most of the Iranians don't like. We overthrow their democratically elected government in the 50s because they weren't sufficiently anti-Soviet Union. Then 1983 comes around and they're at war with Iraq, the Iran-Iraq war. What do? Well, we give all sorts of funding, weaponry, and international legitimacy to Saddam Hussein and Iraq. So we side with Hussein and the Iraqis in their war against Iran. Do you think that's going to make them like us more or less? But wait, as the game show hosts say, there's more. Just 7 years later, 5 or 6 years later, we shot down, we the United States, shot down a passenger airliner, a commercial aircraft filled with civilians, not a military serviceman on there, was shot down by the United States. Now, people in the United States don't seem to remember that, but I'll tell you who does. The people in Iran. There were two opportunities recently for a rapprochement with the government with Iran. One was ISIS, because as much as ISIS hated the United States and the West, because they're Sunni extremists, they hated the Shia extremists of Iran just as much. And believe it or not, there was a great deal of coordination going on, particularly in Iraq, with the Iranian military. It was kind of, you know, through third parties, but there was coordination. That was an extraordinary opportunity. The other opportunity was in Iraq. This government that we installed in Iraq, who did the voters vote for? They essentially voted for a government that looks very much like the Iranian government. They don't have the same cracking down on religious freedom and civil liberties that the Iranians do, but it is, they're largely Shia extremists. So you have the situation where the Iranians want a Shia power right next door to them, not a Sunni one. So the United States also wanted the government in Iraq to survive and to thrive, not only because these are our guys, but because of what it means for oil revenue. So there were two tremendous opportunities to heal the relationships with Iran because of ISIS and because of Iraq. And I think largely they've been missed. And my hope was with Donald Trump, one of the things that I loved about him is his willingness to deal with horrible dictators that everybody said you should never deal with. Everybody, including the people in his own foreign policy team, said you should absolutely not meet with Kim Jong-un. And he did. He met with Kim Jong-un and had the first large summit with North Korea in many years. And what happened after that summit? Were there any large-scale nuclear tests or hydrogen bomb tests for the duration of the Trump administration by North Korea? No, because Trump gave Kim Jong-un exactly what he was craving, except for sanctions relief, which is obviously what he'd want. He gave him credibility. He did the same thing with Vladimir Putin on an international stage, even though he was implementing policies which were very anti-Putin, at least in terms of his public persona. He was very laudatory towards Putin. And I had hoped that he was going to do the same thing with Iran. He didn't. Instead, he tore up the Iran deal, which wasn't perfect and it was flawed in many different ways. But at least it was a way to make sure for at least a short time that the Iranians weren't pursuing a nuclear weapon. I do think the Iranians are pursuing a nuclear weapon if they don't have one already, for a couple of reasons. One, why wouldn't they want one? If you're a country, what is the one thing that guarantees nobody messes with you? Nuclear weapons. What happens when you give up your nuclear weapons? Well, just ask Ukraine. They gave up their nuclear weapons and they were invaded. What happens when you give up other weapons of mass destruction? Just ask Colonel Gaddafi. He gave up his weapons of mass destruction. And what happened? He was overthrown / invaded. So the one thing that every nuclear power in the world can tell you is the U.S. doesn't mess with you if you're a nuclear power. Neither does anyone else. And the other reason that I do think that they're seriously pursuing a nuclear weapon in spite of what they say is that they claim their nuclear energy program is totally peaceful and it's done just for peaceful energy purposes. I don't believe that because they are so oil rich over there that I think that they have enough oil wealth for centuries. Additionally, it's an incredibly unwise thing to do to build nuclear reactors in an area that's very prone to earthquakes. I mean, you're taking the potential of a disaster and multiplying it by 10 once you're building nuclear reactors on major fault lines. So where does this leave us now? You have a situation. Oh, and by the way, there are moderates in Iran. And the moderates in Iran have been totally left with egg on their face because of what the West has done, meaning tearing up the nuclear agreement and a host of other things, keeping up the sanctions, because you had, you know, those folks that you referred to, Joaquin, saying death to America, burning the American flag. Those are the extremists. That's basically the hard right in Iran. And the moderates in Iran, they were saying that we should make this deal with the United States, that it would be good economically, that it would be good for national security. And now that they were proven wrong, all the extremists in Iran have done gangbusters in all the elections. So you had a situation where the failure to establish a relationship between the U.S. and Iran has not only hurt both countries, it's hurt the moderate Iranians. So now, unless Iran has a full-fledged revolution of some sort, I see very little hope that this government will ever liberalize. And that's a real shame. It's a real shame when you have people being beaten and whipped for doing things like singing the song and dancing to the song Happy. And yet that's the reality that a lot of Iranians are living with. So it's just a sad situation all around, and it's just terrible. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Let me begin with continue with David. David, what's on your mind?
Yes, good morning. Let me just amplify a couple of things you said, because I largely agree with what you said, but I disagree with one thing. As far as the reapproachment possibilities, after we invaded Iraq, as you know, the Iranians supplied weapons that killed American soldiers throughout the conflict. So there really wasn't much of a chance for peace with them at that time. And you're right, what Bush did, which was totally wrong, did increase their power in the region. But to get to the nuclear question, which is why I called, as you know, and even though they don't acknowledge it, the state of Israel has a fairly substantial nuclear arsenal. All right. Now, that has not deterred the Iranians up to this point. And if I was the leader of Iran, I would definitely get nuclear weapons at this point, because that's the only deterrent against further, and I don't want to use the aggression, against further Israeli retaliation that they have. Because, like you said, nuclear nations tend not to attack each other. And the only way the Iranians can assure themselves of being safe from both the United States and Israel is to go with that nuclear option, which we're told they might be weeks away from. They have enough enriched uranium currently that it's estimated that it could take less than a month for them to build a relatively decent number of nuclear warheads. That is very concerning. If you're worried about oil prices, Joaquin, and anybody else out there, that's what you should be worried about. Yeah. This continued march towards war, which we're not doing enough to stop. And I fault both parties for this, because we're not doing enough to restrain. You know, listen, what happened in October was awful. I'm all for Israel dealing with Hamas. But the expansion of this war into Iran could severely affect the world economy, including ours. And that is not the time for this. All right. I understand a lot of people don't like that country. They're regressive in a lot of ways. But so is Saudi Arabia. And we're perfectly fine with them. So let's be consistent and let's look out for our own interests above all others, okay? And let's try to prevent them from getting a nuclear weapon. And by encouraging Israel to keep attacking them, we're working against our long-term interests.
Well, I'm not a supporter of President Biden, but this is where I do give President Biden credit. By all accounts, he's been telling Netanyahu, both privately and his administration publicly, don't attack Iran, don't do this. And they've chosen to disregard Biden's warnings to them. So we'll see what Biden does now. We'll see if he just keeps supporting them with money and weapons as he has, or if there are going to be some consequences to this. We'll see. 800-848-9222. Roger in Massachusetts, what do you think?
Thank you. First of all, your 10 or 15 minute monologue just a couple minutes ago, I thought was spectacular. I liked Trump as the negotiator in chief, and his attitude toward everything you said about that.
I appreciate that. Roger, let me just amplify it because I realized that I forgot to close the loop on the point that I was trying to make. One of the shames of that whole situation was that rather than deal with Iran, Trump instead chose to side with Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia was willing to buy hundreds of billions of dollars in American-made weapons. So I think Trump, if left to his own devices, would have dealt with Iran, but that was a non-starter for Saudi Arabia. But go ahead. Let me not get ahead of your point.
All right. Well, anyway, so then I start wondering, for crying out loud, what do you study this stuff as a hobby, history? Or sort of recent? Do you study this stuff on, you know, when you're at home as a hobby or something?
Well, yeah. I mean,
I'm just curious, but that's not the reason I called. The reason I called was that this is the first I hear. I turned my radio on at 2 o'clock, and I heard 10 after 2, and I heard your opening, and so my first reaction was that this seems like so extremely unnecessary on Israel's part. I always side with Israel because there's so many nations that hate them and wish that they were not on the face of the earth, including especially Iran. So what I thought, though, it would seem so unnecessary because the so-called attack Saturday seemed so laughable, mm-hmm. so laughable that I'm surprised that they were wasting the energy to even bother retaliating. And yes, therefore, they're asking for it. I fully back Israel, what they've been doing in Gaza. But this here, I think, was completely unnecessary. And we've asked for it. They've asked for it,
well,
unfortunately.
Yeah, Roger, I hate to put it that way, but I agree largely with what you said there. I mean, there's no comparison between Israel and Iran. Israel is a real democracy that respects human rights, that respects political freedoms, where you can be an Arab citizen in Israel and still enjoy the privilege to vote for who's representing you in the Knesset. Iran is a theocracy. They're autocratic. They don't respect human rights. There's no tolerance for any sort of dissent, political or otherwise. There's no respect for religious freedom. There's no respect, very little respect for women's rights. And it's a shame. And thank you, Roger. It's a shame because the Persian culture and the history of the Persian people is so wonderful. And whenever I meet someone that's of Iranian descent and I ask them, are you Iranian? They'll always say, for whatever reason, no, I'm Persian, because they don't want to be seen as heirs to this horrible regime that's running things now. They want to be seen as the heirs to the great Persian Empire. I'm not going to go so far as to say Israel asked for whatever happens next. I'm just going to go so far as to say Netanyahu and Israel had an opportunity to de-escalate. Iran handed them the perfect off-ramp, and they chose not to. They chose to ramp things up. And I think that's a shame, not just for Israel and Iran, but it's a shame for the United States and the world, because in the short term, it means higher gas prices. In the long term, it means more people are going to be dying, and more people that are selling the weapons to fight these conflicts are going to get rich. 800-848-9222. We'll continue with your calls straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
You know, I'm sorry, 37 minutes after the hour, and I'm going to go ahead and blame Matt Blaze for this. But no, actually, it wasn't Matt Blaze's fault, because during the previous hour of the program, when we were trying to do Ask Frank Anything, I was trying to get one more call in, and I was trying to give a substantive answer in about 10 seconds. I forgot to ask for the winner, as judged by our illustrious staff, of who was the best question for Ask Frank Anything. Matt Blaze, what did you guys pick, or Tony, whoever wants to answer?
Gregory from the Bronx, what is your drag name?
All right, Gregory in the Bronx, call back, and Matt will take your information, and we will give you a prize of some sort. By the way, speaking of Greg's, I want to give a birthday shout-out to Greg Bland, who requested that Billy Joel song, Pressure. Greg Bland is a terrific guy. He is the son of one of my mentors, Marty Bland. He is a partner at a terrific law firm, and the CEO and founder of ThingsToDoDC.com. Very interesting guy, and a great character. And today's his birthday. So happy birthday, Greg Bland. All right. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. I'm going to get back to your calls momentarily. I did want to mention, before we got into other things, the Boeing situation with these whistleblowers. So I've been really eager to see what these whistleblowers were going to say yesterday, in part because I am totally fed up with Boeing, and in part because of what became of the last Boeing whistleblower. He died, supposedly of a suicide, under very mysterious circumstances. Well, yesterday, several whistleblowers, we need a whistleblower sound effect. We can't use that because we'd have to pay PC Richard and Son. But several whistleblowers leveled accusations over manufacturing and safety issues at Boeing before a Senate panel yesterday. And their testimony comes as Boeing is under increasing scrutiny following a mid-air door plug blowout on one of their 737 MAX 9 jets earlier this year. What they're saying is that one of them said that lawmaker, that he was sidelined. This guy who was a quality engineer, Sam Salapour, was sidelined, told to shut up, and received threats after notifying company officials of his concern. He is specifically alleged that the company has failed to fill tiny gaps between components that make up the aircraft's fuselage, which could eventually cause fatigue failure. The FAA confirmed last week that it's investigating those claims. Very, very alarming stuff. Here is Ed Pearson. Ed Pearson is the executive director of the Foundation for Aviation Safety and a former Boeing engineer. He said the FAA and the Department of Transportation were partly responsible for the safety and manufacturing issues within Boeing and the crashes in 2018 and 2019 that killed 346 people. He said government authorities ignored Boeing's manufacturing problems until the Alaska incident. He said these agencies, meaning Department of Transportation and the FAA, have become lazy, complacent, and reactive. Here's a little bit of Ed Pearson.
Boeing routinely states that their airplanes meet or exceed all safety standards. This is untrue and misrepresents the safety of the airplanes. The company illegally removed thousands of quality control inspections on individual airplanes without the FAA's knowledge and without the knowledge of the airlines. Although many of these inspections have been reinstated, hundreds of airplanes have left Boeing factories without those thousands of inspections. My last point is the Department of Justice and FBI relied on the slanted results of the first MAX accident investigation to develop an illegal an unjust deferred prosecution agreement. The NTSB chair reiterated to Congress last week that Boeing has said there are no records documenting the removal of the Alaska Airlines door. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. This is a criminal cover-up. Records do, in fact, exist. I know this because I've personally passed them to the FBI.
Wow. I mean, he didn't make any bones about that. A criminal cover-up. I believe it. I'd like to see some prosecutions. 100%. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello first to Alex in California. Hi, Alex.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Sure. I just wanted to make two comments about nuclear weapons. The first is that there's no way you can stop the spread of it. It's the technology is out there, and anybody who wants it can work on it and build the bomb that they want. So we just have to accept it and deal with it. And the second thing is, in the case of North Korea, one thing we should observe is that the Chinese government is not concerned about nuclear weapons in North Korea. And I don't think their intelligence agencies are stupid. The reason that they're not concerned is because they know the North Koreans have nuclear weapons for only one reason. That is to prevent anybody from attacking them, in particular the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe that's the reason the North Koreans have those weapons.
Well, I think you're right. But I would actually say, I mean, look, North Korea is such a unique case because they're so odd. They're so isolated from the world, and they're a total dictatorship led by a guy who is so quirky and eccentric. But I would venture to say that almost every country that has nuclear weapons has them because they think it's a guarantor of not being attacked. Wouldn't you?
In fact, it is a guarantor because you can see how
exactly
scared and reluctant the Poles and all these other Europeans were initially to offer help to the Ukrainians because they didn't want to kind of involve themselves in a potential nuclear war with Russia.
Yeah, I think you're right, Alex. Sorry, go ahead. You have the last word. Go ahead.
Yes. So that's so it's clear to everybody who's observing the war in Ukraine that it is nuclear weapons that Russia has that causes the Western allies to hesitate, and they've been hesitating for quite some time in supporting Ukraine, and it's understandable.
Well, thank you. I think there are a variety of factors as well. I mean, you know, now, again, I don't want to make this a whole Ukraine situation, but now Mike Johnson and President Trump is supporting this amazingly. He wants to give Ukraine another $60 billion in aid. So what is this $60 billion going to buy that the last $100 billion didn't and the $100 billion before that didn't? And then what happens 6 months from now? Are we just supposed to give them another $60 billion and then another $100 billion? It's just, I think a lot of countries are sick of this bottomless pit, which is not going to help Ukraine win the war. It's going to make military defense contractors rich. If you're a stockholder in one of those companies, you're going to do very well in your portfolio. But it does nothing to help the average Ukrainian that's being blown up. It does nothing to help the average Ukrainian young man that is literally running away and risking his life running away to avoid being drafted and sent to the front lines as cannon fodder. But don't get me started. It's certainly a bigger fish than I can fry. 800-848-9222. Robert, what's on your mind?
I don't think that Israel is right in attacking Iran. But if they do, they should only attack military targets, not civilian, and certainly not oil, because that will be a huge environmental disaster.
Well, Robert, I certainly agree with you for all the reasons that I've stated. But let me play devil's advocate here, because there's a lot of people that are strong supporters of Israel that may disagree. And they're going to say something like this. Look, Israel had no choice but to go after the Iranian targets that played a role in coordinating this October 7th attack. And that's why they had to carry out those attacks in Syria, which resulted in the killing of those Iranian generals. They had no choice but to do that. And then the Iranians chose to escalate this by sending missiles and drones to Israel to try and attack Israel. And Israel had superior defenses and superior allies. And but for the grace of God, we were able to repel that attack. But that attack can't be unanswered. And there's got to be some retaliation to that attack. What do you say to that argument, Robert? Now, I want to be clear. That's not my argument. I agree with you. But there are people that believe what I just said.
Yes, I would agree with you on that point. I would say that the Iranian attack was unsuccessful, and Israel should stick with knocking down the terrorists, which are right at their doorsteps. That would be a lot more productive in keeping Iran at bay than attacking Iran directly, for which they would want to retaliate again.
You know, Robert, I think that's very reasonable. I can't argue with that. 800-848-9222. I'd also love to hear from you if you have anything to say on the Boeing situation as well, because I believe what that whistleblower was saying in terms of there being criminal culpability of Boeing here. And I also believe what that other whistleblower was saying, that the agencies knew about this and they were asleep at the wheel, to put it charitably. We'll continue with your calls in a moment. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Selection. A happy birthday, Greg Bland. You know, I've been in touch with a gentleman who is a journalist in the Middle East by the name of Elijah Magnier. He's a veteran war correspondent, been covering international issues for years. He's in the Middle East right now. I'm not exactly sure where. So he may jump on with us at some point before the end of the program. Obviously, this is very much a fluid situation, so I'm not exactly sure what time. We'll see. But in the meantime, we'll hear from you as you express your views. 800-848-9222. Hopefully, you're still able to enjoy your weekend and have a fun weekend. I am going to Atlantic City for the first time this year with my friend Jeffrey Goldstein for his bachelor party, and I'm looking forward to that. We're going to get some work done. I may, you know, jump on the radio out there a bit. We'll see. And we have two nice dinners planned at some nice restaurants. Hopefully, we get some nice weather. Do a boardwalk stroll. If not, maybe we'll get to check out the film Civil War in IMAX, although that caller called yesterday gave it a very weak review. And then we'll see what else is in the cards. But I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I haven't been since December 31st, and I'm looking forward to being back and seeing what's going on there. So that's that. And then I should be back on Sunday, getting together with some family on Sunday. So all in all, should be a fun but productive weekend. 800-848-9222. Matt Blaze, what are you doing this weekend?
Relaxing. That's about it.
So what is relaxing for you?
What was that?
What is relaxing for you? What is that?
There's a few things I got to take care of around the house, because once again, we had renovations done, so they're pretty much finished. So I have stuff that I got to put in my garage. I have to look at, see what's outside and just clean up. That's relaxing, is cleaning up for the one day that I feel like I have.
Well, we have very different definitions of what relaxing is.
I mean, that's it's not fully relaxing, but that's what I get to do.
All right. Well, okay. So cleaning up.
Cleaning up isn't relaxing, but for me, it's relaxing. All
right, God bless you. So cleaning up, what else?
You know, I got, tomorrow morning I'll watch, or Saturday morning, I'll watch Friday Night SmackDown. Got to check that out and see what movies I've missed and what, series I haven't seen in the last couple of months. I started watching, by the way, I did start watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I went back to, I think when they first came back, what was it, in 2020?
I don't remember. Well, what? Tell
whenever
me.
It was, yeah. it was when he was wearing the MAGA hat. It was
Okay. That was actually I think 2018 or 2019.
Yeah, it was that season.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, that was that one. I went back to that. So I'm starting from there.
Yeah,
and moving forward.
That's a good season. That's the season with Mocha Joe, I think, if I'm remembering.
Yeah, I watched that episode too.
That's good. Okay, Tony, what about you? What's on your agenda?
This weekend the NBA playoffs begin. So Saturday I'll be watching my beloved Knicks play the Philadelphia 76ers, and after that, catch up on my recordings of Law and Order that came on last night on Thursday nights.
Now they're still making new Law and Orders?
Yes, there's three different Law and Orders. There's a regular Law and Order, then there's a Special Victims Unit, and then can't remember the third one to save my life. Yeah, but there's three different ones.
All right, and you're a fan of all of them?
Correct.
Okay, good for you. That's great. All right, well, good. We all have plans, and we'll see. Hopefully you're doing something fun as well. 800-848-9222. Original Rick is in Original Jersey. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Frank.
Morning.
Just a quick thing on the Israel responding to Iran. I think, first of all, I don't think they told anybody, Iran. We found out because they had to tell the countries that they were shooting missiles over. So those countries didn't think they were being attacked in response to Iran. I think particularly Jordan, they had to say, we're flying over you. Jordan let us know. I don't think they told us directly or wanted to. If they were going to do just a response, why didn't they send 50 missiles or 25, 300? I think they really meant them to get through. We were just better than they ever thought that we would be. Second, this is the only chance Israel will have to take out their nuclear facilities before they make a bomb. Because if they don't do it now, they will be the aggressors when they do. They will have to attack Iran unprovoked to stop them from getting a bomb and saving their own butt. So this is the time they have to do it. There's not going to be either. It's a reason slash excuse to do this. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to do it, and they're going to be eventually taken out because we know Iran will use them.
So yeah, but they're saying that Israel didn't attack any nuclear sites.
Well, not yet, but now we're talking about in the response to this 300 missiles, they're going to have to do something. They should do it now because when are they going to get a chance to do it again and not the world totally condemned and saying you attacked Iran unprovoked.
Yeah, I mean, the way that Israel has been managing Iran's nuclear program up until now is generally by assassinating Iranian nuclear scientists. They, they get close to making some breakthroughs with their Iranian nuclear program, and then all of a sudden, the scientists that are in charge of that end up getting assassinated. They've also been carrying out a number of cyber attacks to kind of sabotage the Iranian nuclear program. So I think, you know, that's proven to be a much more effective way of limiting Iran's nuclear development than just haphazardly bombing everything, but we'll see. We will see. You know, Iran's official news agency, by the way, said its defense system shot down three drones when they violated its airspace. Now that suggests the drones came from outside the country. If there was no damage and the drones didn't reach a target, you would think that's a de-escalation. And people are saying that life's back to normal in both Iran and Israel. No state of alerts, no nuclear sites attacked, and really, if that's true, that means no sense of war except on Twitter and on the radio. U.S. sources are escalating all sorts of leaked information. But we'll see. We'll delve more into this and we'll keep following it. Your influence counts. Use it.